Bears Rod Crane, a Microsoft Office 365 MVP who knows practically everything there is about Office 365. He does stand-up events talking about Office 365. He writes about Office 365 on his blog site, and he does in-person training sessions and training videos about Office 365. There's also me, Mark Keane. I'm the voiceover guy and producer of this podcast. I'm also a Microsoft Azure technical specialist, PowerShell extraordinaire, and IT consultant helping people move to the Microsoft cloud and consume it by helping them to make sense of it. This is a Need to Know podcast with Robert Crane and Mark Keane.
Contact us by email.
Feedback@needtoknow.cloud. It's your destination for anything Microsoft Cloud, including Azure and Office 365.
And Office 365.
And Office 365. And Office 365.
Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast. This is episode 112, and I'm joined again by Mark Keane. Welcome, Mark.
Hello. Episode 112. Wow, that's fantastic. That's
okay, so what's that in hexadecimal? There. Quickly.
I don't know.
Yeah, what see, is that? You're not up to it at the moment, are you? But it's
multiplied by 8, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm glad you're twisting the buttons because I certainly can't convert it to hex without my MS calculator in Windows 10. What's been happening on your side of the fence recently?
Been busy. The migration script which I wrote at the previous company to go from ASM to ARM to automate that process. I've just been busy putting together a version 2 with a few more bells and whistles and some more functionality and a few streamlined bits to it. So that is due for release shortly. It's still very, very much in need out there in the market, especially for people jumping across from one subscription to another, especially when it comes to CSP licensing and stuff like that, which is very, very big on Microsoft's radar. So yeah, that's coming out very, very soon, and I've just been busy my head inside of PowerShell ISE, and you know what, PowerShell has never looked any better on a 4K monitor. I'm very lucky to have one at home and one at work in the office.
So you haven't migrated to the open source version on Linux yet?
Not yet. And I was listening to another podcast the other day in relation to that, and Jeffrey Snover was on there talking about the PowerShell release on Linux. But apparently it's mixed information I'm getting, whether it's going to be a full-blown and everything is going to be like it's a full kit sort of from day one, whether it's going to be like everything supported. Like I don't think it is. It's going to have different commandlets available to use because the different operating system and the different hardware and things like that. But I don't know. I'll wait, I guess, because it's only .NET Core, whichever. I'm not 100% what .NET Core means. Do you know what .NET Core means?
Well, I think basically, I'm not a dev sort of person, but I think it's just basically it is a cut-down version. It's obviously the things that make sense on a Linux box. But I think the important thing, obviously, is the fact that Microsoft now is embracing the open source, is obviously getting more people involved, is looking to integrate it further into its tools and bring its developers into that environment. So I think that's a really smart move. And again, it provides some very powerful tools, again, like PowerShell, for people to be able to work in both environments. Now, today, it's probably a bit early days, but 6, 12, 18 months down the track, we can see that one scripting language to rule them all may be the case. And I think that's the reason that Microsoft's doing this, is that you're going to have people that want to manage both environments using the single tool. And again, now's the early stages of sort of that vision from Microsoft.
That's exactly right. And also, too, they've open sourced PowerShell as well, which basically means they can and anyone can use it. Anyone can sort of contribute to the code and the language behind it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a big change from what Microsoft used to be about and its focus. So, again, it's a good indication that the ship is turning and it's recognizing that that's a very important part of the business world, the business software and the environment that we are in these days. So I think that's really good news, and again, certainly encourage people to have a look at that, get into it, understand it. As we talked about on our last episode around Docker and containers, again, another important technology, So again, we try to bring you stuff that we certainly think that is going to be important for an IT professional or anyone in IT to understand and be across in some way when it comes to using the technology, especially Microsoft stuff.
So what have you been up to, Rob, lately?
Been flying around the country doing presentations for one of the vendors on Skype for Business and collaboration. So Skype for Business obviously is going to have the dial-in PSTN conferencing, which will be available 1st of September, and Cloud PBX. The full Cloud PBX is not very far away either. So again, the idea is to give resellers an idea of what's involved and obviously to stir them up a bit to get them looking at that as an option to provide to their clients.
So what's the feedback been like? Like, what's the turnout been like at the events and the interest and stuff like that?
The turnout's very good generally. Like I said, it depends on location by location. But what we're finding is that certainly, you know, I think there's a lot of hesitancy out there. People, resellers tend to be very conservative in the fact they sort of say, oh, I want to see it running. I want to see it up and running. I want to see how all the I's and the dots and what all the options are. And it's like, well, you know what? By the time that's happened, it's going to be too late. It's going to have moved on to version two. So I think, again, there's an opportunity there for people who are willing to obviously take a bit of a risk, do a bit of investment, you know, maybe go down a bit of an unknown path at this point. But I think the payoff will be quite significant for those that do. I think those that sit on their hands, sit on the fence, are certainly going to be behind the ball and are going to fall further behind because the technology is just going to accelerate when it comes out. And I'm very, very, very confident that it will be out in a very, very short period of time.
Can't wait because I think I mentioned before the place where I'm currently working at the moment, we've got Skype for Business internally only for the pure fact that we can have telephony over Skype for Business. But soon as it comes out, we'll be switching to the cloud for sure because it saves us having to manage a Skype for Business server, and when it goes down, it does go down from time to time, and we have problems with it. It's a pain in the butt backside.
Well, I think part of it also, too, is that you're going to have one Office 365 login, which is also used for Skype, which means all the reporting, the compliance, all that sort of great stuff. And again, it's going to be able to be deployed without the need for additional on-prem hardware. Obviously, it's going to take a little while to get up to par with maybe some of the third-party solutions people are used to, but again, I think that the business opportunity certainly is to get on the train early, learn this stuff. And what I point out to resellers is how many other resellers do you know or have you seen in the market that portray themselves or use their marketing to push the fact that they are Skype for Business experts? So no one I know out there is, you know, touting the fact that Skype for Business is a major component of their business and, you know, customers should come to them to talk about it. So again, I think there's a huge opportunity with that product.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
Again, it's right on customers' radar for, you know, wanting to integrate a Microsoft telephony solution.
I fully agree, 100%. So other stuff that's happening and that's been announced just recently is Azure's CDN network. There's been an announcement in relation to that. Rob, CDN, do you know what that stands for?
Content Delivery Network.
Well done. And just for those who don't understand exactly what it is, Content Delivery Network is mainly used for blob storage for your files and bigger files and things. So rather than having your files stored on like a single server in a single place around the world, making it slower for, let's say the files are stored on the server in Sydney and it's very, very slow for somebody in London to access those files because they're on the other side of the globe, a CDN means that the CDN provider can cache those files on their servers, and their servers are spread across the world globally already. So it just means that when somebody in London accesses your files in Sydney, they won't be going to Sydney exactly. They'll be going to like a local server in London without even knowing about it. So yeah, so the announcement is in relation to the Azure CDN. They were using Verizon's CDN network before, but now just released is the ability for people to use Akamai's CDN network. And Akamai has been around for donkey's years. It's been around for ages, and it's huge. And I reckon, just quietly, I reckon it's the best one out there. Don't you reckon, Rob?
Yeah, it's certainly been around for a long time, and I think that, you know, a lot of the big content deliverers certainly use Akamai. It's been around for a while. So I think, again, it's probably what I know anyway, little I know, would seem to be the biggest and the baddest out there. So,
well, yeah, I mean, they reckon the two biggest in the world, both Verizon, which is was Azure still using now, and Akamai. So that's two biggest. Azure's got them right now. But also, too, like in relation to websites as well, the other popular one that people use is a company called Cloudflare. And the good thing about Cloudflare is if you go to a website and they got set up for that, you'll notice when they first go to the website, it checks to make sure like there's no it's not being no viruses are being sent through to the website. So it's got the security built into it at that point. But that does it a little bit differently. But yeah, Cloudflare is one of the popular ones out there. But I guess it's good news for Azure, the fact that Akamai is finally part of their platform, which is fantastic.
Okay, so I've got a question for you.
Yes.
Have you seen or played with the new Microsoft Authenticator app yet?
Yes. You mean the Azure Authenticator app?
Yeah, so the one they've got in beta now, I'm still fiddling with it, trying to work out how to, apparently you can automatically unlock your Windows 10 workstation using this authenticator. So if you've got any tips, let me know. I'm still trying to work out how to actually make that happen.
Looking at my phone now, I've got an authenticator app, which is it's called Azure Authenticator, and there's a whole bunch of accounts that you can add to it. I've got like Azure account set up on it for multi-factor authentication, and I've got my LastPass account hooked up there again for LastPass multi-factor authentication. When you set it up, you take a photo of a QR code. Is that the one you were talking about?
No, I think this isn't actually a new one. This is one they've put in beta recently. I think that they're going to merge those two together. This authenticator app allows you, for example, if you want two-factor authentication on your Outlook account, that sort of thing, you can use this one. But I think the key one that I saw was that if you have the anniversary update with Windows 10 and this new beta, obviously it's in beta, it's in testing, authenticator app from Microsoft, you can unlock your Windows 10 device. It would seem to me that you're able to do that with Bluetooth, but I haven't had much success as of late. Not a lot of writings about actually how to set it up. So anyway, I'm sure I'll figure that out by the next time. Just thought you might have had a play with that as yet. But we'll put it up in the show notes so people can have a look at it. But again, very handy little way to unlock your Windows 10 device by probably
here
just
swiping
your
it.
Phone. Yeah, exactly.
Microsoft Authenticator. So the other one's Azure Authenticator. This one's Microsoft Authenticator.
Correct. Yeah, which I think is more aimed at obviously the consumer side and maybe Windows 10, user style, but it seems to work with the pro version and can be hooked up to your Office 365 account. So, again, early days with that, but there's not a lot of documentation around on it yet, unsurprisingly.
Actually, just looking at the screenshots now, the accounts page is exactly the same as the account section on the Azure Authenticator. And the Azure Authenticator app, even though it says Azure, you can use it for other things, like I'm using LastPass, for example. You can add Google in there as well. As I said, like it's pretty much the same thing. You just take a photo of the QR code to set it up, and then it gets in sync with the provider or the vendor that you're trying to log into. So I reckon it's probably the same thing. But it's just
it would seem to be one obviously maybe they're testing in beta, but again, we'll work it out and play around with. But if you want two-factor authentication, Microsoft Authenticator will allow you to do that. So
it's asking me to update the original.
There you go. Yeah. See, it's going to update it to the new version.
That's exactly it. So it's just gone from Azure Authenticator to Microsoft Authenticator. Same program.
Exactly. So anyway, fantastic. Something for us to play around with in the background. Any other news from your end, Mark, before we throw over to our guest?
Yeah, just quickly, I guess. I just wanted to remind people who are using Azure that there's a website called resources.azure.com, and the website it opens up sort of Azure from the back end from a resource topology point of view, and you can navigate through subscriptions and resource groups and resource providers. It also targets both your classic, the old Azure, ASM, Azure Service Manager, and also ARM, Azure Resource Manager. It targets both environments. So it's a very, very good tool to use to get a really good understanding of Azure from the behind the scenes and how it's all put together. And it's all set up in JSON format. So, so we'll put a link in the show notes. But anybody can access this site, by the way. All you need to do is have an Azure logon or an Azure subscription. And you can navigate through all of your, like, a hierarchy, and it's sort of set up like as a tree. So resources.azure.com, it's highly recommended.
Yeah, plenty of resources out there, and again, lots of new stuff coming from Microsoft. We should see some more announcements coming soon, especially a big flow, I think, from the upcoming Ignite conference, which I think is towards the end of September. So the news is a little light, I suppose, but I think that there's a lot of saving up for the announcements that will flow thick and fast come Ignite. So we better get ready for those, Mark, because I'm pretty sure there's going to be lots and lots of material for us to cover.
Exactly. And we have, I guess I'll just throw in just quickly, we have a special guest on the next podcast, episode 113. I can't really give too much away, but he's confirmed, he's accepted my meeting invite.
Does he know PowerShell at all?
Does he know PowerShell? All I can say is he invented PowerShell. So if you know who that is...
Quick, everybody go to Wikipedia and find out.
So yeah, he's coming on, pretty excited about it. He's coming on to our next podcast to talk about OMS, which is Operations Management Suite, with a focus on desired state configuration. But yeah, pretty much OMS, which is a hot topic with Microsoft at the moment. And I think a lot of people, once they listen to it and find out what it is, they'll be flocking to use it.
So why don't we get people to suggest who that person may be by sending us an email via our new feedback email address,
which is
feedback@needtoknow.cloud. So again, exactly. If you think you know who the next person, our guest will be on our next episode 113, send us an email to feedback@needtoknow.cloud, and we'll basically give you a pat on the back and let you know that you're a very smart person. I think that's probably the easiest way to get around having to hand out prizes. What do you reckon?
Sounds good.
All right, well, I think with that, we've covered enough from our side. We're going to throw over to our guest for this episode, Rayanne. She and I are going to talk about what's involved and things to think about when you go to sell your SMB MSP-style business. So lots of good business information there. And with that, the quickest way to get in touch with me is probably on the Twitter, at DirectorCIA. What about yourself, Mark?
It's Twitter as well, or my blog post. It's all the same. So it's Mark Keane, MarkKean. That's Twitter. And my blog is markkean.com.
Easy. All right. Well, I think we will now jump into this week's episode. And again, watch out for episode 113 with our special guest.
Huge guest.
Exactly.
Rianne Bianico, how are you going, Rianne?
I'm doing great, Robert. How are you?
Not too bad. I didn't butcher that last name too badly, did I?
That's okay.
As we always do, let's start off with getting our guest to introduce herself and just letting everybody know who you are and what you do.
Oh, well, thank you, first of all, for having me here today. My name's Rianne Bianico, and you didn't butcher it too hard. I own ABC Solutions, and we are an MSP consulting company in Clearwater, Florida, in the U.S. I am also a partner in Sell My MSP with Amy Babinchek, and you might also find me helping Carl Palachuk out on teaching some classes on financial financial processes for the MSP. So what I typically do is I work with MSPs, helping them gain more out of their business.
Cool. Well, again, that's the topic that we'll be covering today. And I think that, the big change, obviously, we're seeing the market is the shift to the cloud computing. We're at one of those inflection points in technology, and that's obviously creating a opportunity for some people, obviously, to grow and to improve their business and step it up to the next level. But on the other side of the coin, it's probably also making a lot of people think as to whether they should stay in the industry, whether their business needs to perhaps merge, or maybe they need to sell out, or maybe they need to exit the business completely. So I think it's a very good, obviously, time to address the issue and sort of help people and maybe give them some insights into the experience that you've got around, you know, how to start dealing with this concept of, you know, what do I do with my business? Because even if you don't, you know, sell it, move on, whatever you've got to do, it's always worthwhile having a plan. I mean, is that, you know, a fair statement that you should be thinking about, you know, this sort of an exit strategy, even if you don't choose to execute it?
Absolutely. There is no time that is too early to start planning your exit from your business. As a business owner, you should always start with the end in mind. You know, what do you ultimately want this business to provide for you and for your families? And so even though you may just be starting a business or you have no intention of leaving the industry anytime soon, you might want to consider running your business in such a way that if the perfect offer came to your table for you to be bought out or merge with another company, do you want to be prepared for those things, or do you want to just kind of continue on, you know, running your business as a, you know, as a job? And so we could start there. You know, first of all, you know, what do you want with the business? And do you ultimately want to sell? Do you ultimately want to be acquired by a larger company? Or do you just want to be able to work and live, you know, contently with your small business until it's time to close the doors and retire? So first decide what you want to do with that business. And as you said, Robert, there are lots of opportunities, you know, cloud computing and things that maybe the older generation IT professional doesn't really want to get involved in. Maybe they think that the margins aren't large enough. Maybe they think that it's too much trouble to stop doing the on-prem servers and start, you know, understanding how everything works in the cloud and virtual environments. There's plenty of people out there that, you know, are very content with having, you know, their small company, their small group of customers. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you do plan to treat your business as a job, and you just want to have this business, you know, maintain itself until you're ready to leave, you should at least plan for that retirement. You know, just as if you had a job and you got up and you went to work and did your 9-to-5 every day, 40 hours a week or however many hours, when you left, when you retire at age 65 or whatever, you know, what will you take with you when you leave that job? Hopefully, you'll take a retirement plan or a pension plan of some sort. Now, if you own that job, you need to plan for that retirement yourself, because nobody's going to do it for you. So, question?
No, I was just going to say, it's. I think that's one of the interesting points, is that obviously in our little field with our resellers and our technology people, they're very good at their technology people, but their technology side of things. But when it comes to actually running a business and thinking of the business as an entity separate from themselves, I think that's where a lot of people obviously haven't made that distinction. And I think, you know, it's important to understand that your business is not you. And like you said, what do you actually want outside of your business is, you know, the important point to start, because then that's going to drive a lot of this, you know, what are you trying to get out of your business? And as much as we all like fiddling around with technology, again, at the end of the day, we do have to put food on the plate and we do have to pay off a mortgage. So, again, I think that's a really key point for most people, to actually look at the separation between the two, rather than basically, like I said, if they are so tightly merged together, then it's almost becomes very much very difficult to be able to separate the two and, as you say, get value out of the job or the business that you've built.
Exactly. And if you are running your business like a job, and you are your business, then there's nothing to sell because you can't sell yourself. You only can sell the business. And when it comes time for you to retire, if the customers are so ingrained with the business owner and not the business itself, if the business has its does not have its own identity, it becomes less marketable for somebody else to be able to come in because they're not you. And the customer is only used to working with you and, you know, not this group of other people. And who are these techs? And, you know, why am I letting them in my doors and onto my servers? You know, that's very scary for customers. So, you know, it's never too early to start the plan, you know, to get into those good business habits, to be able to separate yourself from your business, so that at some point in time, whether it's 5 years or 10 years or even 20 years from now, you know, your customers are already, they're already focused on the fact that they are doing business with XYZ IT company and not Bob, not Robert Crane or, you know, Bob Smith or whoever you are.
So is the are we seeing that sort of, are you seeing like a growth in that transition at the moment? Are you seeing, you know, more technology businesses looking to make a transition, obviously out of their business or to merge it with others? I mean, has there been a noticeable change in that sort of demand? Is that, you know, becoming a more common thing in the market today?
Interestingly enough, it is. I am contacted by more MSPs around the world who are interested in growing by acquiring other MSPs or other IT companies. You know, they can see that diamond in the rough and they know that they can use, you know, take those customers and merge them in or assimilate them into their own environment, you know, in order to grow their business. Sometimes it's a lot easier to, you know, go out, purchase another existing business with the existing customers than trying to organically grow your business one at a time through personal, you know, one-to-one networking and advertising and marketing. So, you know, I'm finding that there are a lot of companies out there that are looking to purchase other MSPs. There are probably more companies looking to buy than there are companies looking to sell at this point.
So I think that obviously there is that, and it would seem to me that the majority of people that are looking to sell out are obviously the smaller operators, the maybe the one, the two man, even up to three man situation that are looking for that transition. In your experience, those people that are looking to you know, sell their business or move on or do whatever, are they doing it to you know, get into a bigger business? Are they doing it to sell the business and take the value and retire, or are they doing it to get out of the industry? What's sort of the most common reason that you find that they're looking to make this transition with their business?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I do see it all over the map, quite frankly. We just handled one sale of a business where the gentleman was unable to make a decent profit, and he was spinning wheels. So the buyer came in, and as a matter of fact, as it turned out, the buyer was a two-man shop and the seller was an eight-man shop.
Oh, wow.
So roles were a little reversed, and so the buyer came in and started, and then the process began of, you know, trying to make sure that all of the engineers started to follow, you know, certain processes, internal processes that were never in place in the old company. So it really was a diamond in the rough. You know, we had a company, an eight engineer company, making about $250,000 in gross revenue. I'm sorry, $750,000 in gross revenue, and the new owner could see that it was worth something, but the processes were so far out of place. Nobody was following any order. They were just kind of grabbing tickets from the PSA and doing things, and they had no idea if they were making money or losing money. And so I guess the old owner just got tired of trying to spin wheels and, you know, chase after a bunch of dollars and, you know, just became too much. So he decided he was going to sell to this other company and just move on and do something completely different. Now, there are others that, you know, like this seller that want to stay in the business but don't want to run the company anymore. They don't want to be bothered with the administrative, the sales, and, you know, the invoicing and all of that. They just want to fix computers, you know, and set up networks and do the fun technology stuff. And then there are others that are aging and are getting ready to, you know, leave the workforce. They've put in their 30 or 40 years of working in IT, and now they want to go home and spend time with their families. So, you know, there's all sorts of reasons why people want to, you know, sell their company or, you know, get out of the industry entirely.
Okay, so obviously, you know, for whatever reason, the individuals decided that they want to, you know, transition their business, either, you know, have it acquired or they want to sell it in total to somebody else. I mean, you know, what's sort of the first thing that once they've come to that realization that they need to start doing in order to plan for this transition? I mean, what's, you know, once they've made that decision and they're going to move forward with it, you know, what's the sort of the number one step that they now need to take to obviously prepare the business and get it ready for this transition, either to new owners or to, you know, some other entity?
There are a number of steps that that any business owner should want to take before they take their business to market. So if you look at the three key elements of your IT business, you've got a service department. These are the people that service the customers. You have a sales department, and these are the people that sell the items, and they are promising the new customers the items that the service department are going to deliver. And then you have the administrative department, and those are the people that are going to do the invoicing and the organizing to make sure that everything runs smoothly. So before you do anything, you need to look at these three key elements of your business and make sure that everything is running as optimally as possible. You know, you want the administrative office to make sure that the finances are in order, that the company is showing a profit. It's really difficult to sell a company that's not making a profit. It's not impossible, but it is challenging. And you want to make sure that the service department is doing its job. The customers are happy. There's not a lot of customer turnover. There's not a lot of engineer turnover. You want to make sure that, you know, that all of your internal processes are working smoothly, and the customers are happy and referring new business. So you also want to make sure that you are a marketable business where customers are finding you, coming to you, and signing on with you. So
I was just going to say that it's very interesting that you know, my experience has been is that obviously, you know, the technicians come out from a previous job and they've started their own business and they've got it up and they've got customers, they've got referrals, they do a great job, they get testimonials, but they get locked on the technology side. And like I said, you know, then they decide, oh, you know, I want to transition, I want to do something else, I want to grow, whatever. And they fail to see the value of the business to other people. So obviously, you know, it's provided them with some revenue, it's provided them with an opportunity to build a business to obviously, you know, keep them occupied. But then when they do look to transition it, they don't really appreciate the value it has to someone else. So they look at their business through rose-colored glasses, and like you said, you know, everything looks fine, all the customers are happy, all the billings, you know, up to date, in inverted commas. But if someone from the outside looked at it without emotion and looked at it as a pure business transaction, they probably point out that, you know, the accounts are getting out to 90 plus days, the staff aren't particularly happy or maybe not productive. Again, I think that's one of the failings or one of the challenges that many people who do own a business can get caught up in, is this: they really see the business through rose-colored glasses and they don't look at it as though, you know, someone else is going to buy it. And I think that a good discipline, obviously, is that to go through that process even for yourself and, like, look at other businesses and say, well, you know, if I was to purchase this business, what would I want to see? How much would I pay? You know, and again, look at it a bit clinically to get that sort of feel and then obviously apply that to their own business. But is that a fair statement? Do you see that where people, again, they look at their own business and they think it's, you know, fairly, you know, its value is much higher than it is, and there are some simple things, like you mentioned, that can be tweaked, that can be improved to obviously add that value to a buyer or whatever.
You're absolutely right. People often look at their business and they say, oh, I could be making, you know, an extra $250,000 if I really wanted to work that hard, you know, but I really don't, but I still think that my business is worth it because, you know what, I put 25 years of my, you know, blood, and sweat, and tears into this business. And you're right, they do have a very emotional connection to that business and to every one of those customers. I sold my own business, and I remember, you know, I remember as I was handing over my client list to the buyer, thinking, do I really want to let go of this person? That person's been with me for so long. They've been really good to me. Do I really want to? You know, and you have to separate yourself. Nope, this is okay. They're going to be in good hands in the new owner's, you know, company. And I've got to let that go. And it is really difficult. So as you are thinking about your exit strategy, try to put yourself into that place, that moment of time when you are handing over the keys to your office, sending out the client list, and, you know, and giving out, you know, the keys to the kingdom, so to speak, with all of the passwords and credentials, and getting ready to walk away. And that's going to be the big sign as to how ready you are to walk away from your business. And if you get to that point, you can start to separate that emotion from the finances. Now you're ready. Now you're really ready to look at your business as, you know, objectively, to say, okay, what areas need to be fixed? And start to tackle them head on. You know, and you might want to start probably 3 to 5 years out. You know, start to really think, you know, hey, I'm going to turn 64 this year. Maybe it's time I start to think about what's going to happen when I don't want to work any longer. And you plan that out. You can't just wake up one day, Robert, and say,
I think you're exactly right. I think that's what I see is that the guidance I give to a lot of people is that, you know, your business is probably running well, you're enjoying it, you know, you're keeping busy. There are the times you have ups and downs, as we do in any business. But again, there's probably going to come a point in the road where there are some bumps, where there are some challenges, where your situation may change. You may have to relocate. You may have health issues. There may be some financial or relationship breakdowns. And again, it's generally what happens is that that point, when it's under pressure, when people are under the pump, they then say, oh, I must sell my business, or I need to convert it, or I need to do something with it. And again, it all becomes very rushed. And, you know, as with anything, there's not that preparation, there's not that investment. And obviously, a lot of them, people that I do that sell, see that they sell in that situation, do so for far less than the value of their actual business. So I think the example that, I suppose, the thing that woke me up to a lot of this a long time ago was a presentation that I went to SMB Nation, one of the first SMB Nation I went to, thanks to Harry Brelsford. It was a presentation by George Sergio on basically run it like you're going to sell it. And his key message, which, you know, really resonated with me at the time because I hadn't even considered it, was basically run it like you're going to sell it. Even if you're not going to sell it, you need to set it up so that at any point in time you could pull the ripcord effectively as quickly as possible, and then separate the entity from yourself and take the value out of that organization. And doing that gives you that flexibility if it should present itself, if someone comes along with a decent offer, or like if your situation changes. But I think that is something that I see is so many people, especially in technology, have so wedded to their business, and then they have a situation where they require desperately to sell the business, and it all becomes very rushed and they don't get much value from it. So again, I certainly back up those sentiments 100%.
I would agree entirely with that.
So I think we've obviously looked at the situation where the owner is taking that first step. They're looking to sell their business. Let's say that they've done that. They've got it up and to a point where it's sellable. When they're ready to sell it, how do they go about that? How do they go about being acquired or getting the deal that they want? Do they advertise? Do they just hang on? Do they talk to their peers? Let's say they want to be proactive and leave the industry or leave the business. When they've got their business in order, what's the next step in the process to actually, obviously getting out or getting the maximum value for that business?
Sure, there's a number of steps that people can take. Some people, want to pass the business on to their kids or somebody in the family. Others will want to sell the stock to an employee, a loyal employee who's been with you for years and years. You can structure a deal to have the employee buy the stock from you, from the company. We also, sellmymsp.com, we're a listing service. We're not brokers, but we are a listing service, and, we are listing strictly MSPs and IT companies for sale. So people can come and list their companies with us. You can also list yourself as a buyer if you're interested in buying companies. Or, I'm sure there are business brokers all around the world. I know there are a dime a dozen here in the States. I'm sure they exist almost everywhere. Although the thing about SellMyMSP is that we didn't want to be as expensive as a business broker. So, we work on a flat rate, one fee, that's it. You're not paying a percentage of the sale price or anything like that, or a minimum fee or anything like that. So, we tried to do that. We tried to structure it for the smaller MSPs that maybe want to get out without breaking the bank and using up their entire budget.
Sorry, so is your service, the SellMyMSP, is that just US-based, or are you looking, can you do international people in case they're listening as well?
We can do international people as well. As a matter of fact, we had somebody contact us UK just recently, so that's when we decided to branch out internationally, because we are just a listing service. We are matching the buyers with the sellers, and we're not structuring the deal. We are merely facilitating the transfer of the information. If the buyer or the seller or both of them need help in gathering information, we have checklists. We walk you through the whole process before the initial introduction, so you've got plenty of time to review some information before you say, yes, I think this might be a good fit. And then, once we get to the point that you're ready to be introduced, then, we make that introduction, and then everything else happens between the buyer and the seller. We provide the forms, we provide the support, but all of the negotiation happens between the two of them.
Okay, so again, we've had the person prepare their business or decide they want to, obviously move their business and change it. They've prepared it as best they can. They've then found a suitable partner, a suitable owner, a suitable buyer for their business, and they've, commenced negotiations. I mean, what's sort of the process that's involved there? Is it, something that happens quickly? Is it something that happens over a period of time? What things sort of, do they need to keep in mind or to look out for? That actual negotiation process, the actual sale process before the contracts are signed, what's that look like?
Well, that's really up to the buyer and seller. We had one that from the time that the company listed on our site until the closing of the sale between the buyer and the seller was about 60 days. And everything just magically aligned. We had this company that had their books in complete order. Everything was organized, and the financials were right in line with the asking price and everything. Then we had two interested buyers, both vying for attention with this seller, and one of them said, it jumped on it and said, I'd like the introduction right away, and so we introduced them. We gave them all of the forms and the checklists. They did all of their due diligence in about 45 days, and they closed. The buyer had the money and the financing available right away because they were already actively seeking to purchase that company. So it can happen quickly. It can happen slowly if you know if the buyer is diligent person type person saying I want to look at this, I want to look at all of these individual details, and I'm not budging until I get the answers to all of these details. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, it's your business, it's your money. You should be absolutely certain that you want to part with that money for this business before you do it. We don't rush anybody. We're there to help. That's all we are.
Okay, so again, you've gone through the process of doing the negotiations, and let's say that you've signed the contract, and you handed over the keys. The transition out of the business for most business owners, in your experience, is it a case of, you hand over the keys, you walk away, you never see it again? Or is there, I work in the business for a transition period of 6 to 12 months to make it, ease it for customers? What's your experience as sort of recommendation? Is it best to sort of transition that way, or is it best to just say, right, it's sold and walk away from it?
That transition period is so critical to the success of the buyer because the customers know the seller. The customers know the seller, and the seller knows the customer's businesses. So the things that you don't want to do is you don't want to push that seller out the door, and you don't want to push his staff out the door either, because the staff also knows all of those customers. You want to change as little as possible for the customer's experience for that smooth transition. You want the seller to introduce you to each of the individual customers so that you can start to build your own relationship with them and slowly transition that seller out of his or her job. And ultimately, that's what he or she will want anyway. They want you to be successful. They don't want their customers to have to start all over again and find a new IT person. They've trusted you with their customers. They want you to be as successful as you want to be.
Okay, so obviously the transition, the smooth transition is the way to go. It's also probably best for the new owner and also the seller. It gives them the ability to, make that transition themselves and get familiar with that change of environment. Now, I suppose another question I think that's very important or very interesting here is, if you're looking to sell your business and you've set it up right, how do you actually go and tell your customers? Is there a good way to tell them? Is there, how do you sort of approach that? Because like I said, in many cases, the business has been brought up, has been built on the relationship the owner has with the customers, and they've worked with them for many, many years. The customers are happy. They're familiar with the employees, with the staff that they're working with. And obviously, there's a fear in the customer's mind that, the business is going to change and they may not work and they may not be able to get through as quickly as possible. And so what's the process, or what's your recommendation around when it comes to selling your business to how to speak with, the customer, how to give them that, the good news or the bad news, I suppose, is the best way to address it.
Right. The customers are going to be disappointed. Just go in knowing that. The customers are going to be momentarily disappointed, but they will support you, and they will look forward to meeting the replacement. Every time you hire on a new engineer or a new technician, you slowly introduce them to the customers that they're going to take over. And the customers usually will work well with them. They understand that you are growing, that you are changing. They understand that life changes. They are business owners too. Remember that. That they are always, your customers are also business owners, so they will understand that it's time for you to do something different now, and that you have taken every opportunity to, you know, make sure that they are well taken care of. Everybody has their own way of doing it. I have seen some people send letters. I have seen people throw parties inviting all of the customers to come and meet the new owner and see the new office. And I have seen, you know, some people, you know, just pick up the phone and, you know, and call each one individually. I think, you know, that's very time consuming and not entirely personal. So, but of course, neither is a letter. Each company is going to be different. You have a relationship with your customers, and the way that your customers are used to communicating with you, you probably, you know, should use that to your advantage. And, you know, face-to-face meetings are good. You know, invite them out, talk to them, you know, introduce them to the new person. You know, there's any number of ways to do it. send a box of cookies with a card if you would like, you know, but you just do it with a soft shoe. That's all I'm saying.
I think part of it too is like you said, they are business owners, and I think the way to do it is put yourself in their shoes and sort of think, well, okay, if someone came to me, one of my vendors said that they'd sold their business or something else, you know, how would I want to be approached? How would I feel if in this situation? How would I want it communicated to me? So I think that's the, you know, some good advice you've given there. Now, obviously, as we get towards our wrap-up of the episode, is there anything that we've missed, any other key elements that in your experience you're seeing or that again, people that overlook or that, you know, has come up through best practices? Are there any other little tips and tricks, suggestions or key elements that we may not have covered so far?
My biggest piece of advice is to stay on top of your financials at all times, and not just because you may or may not sell the business, at some point in the future, but those financials are going to be your key to staying profitable and proving your profitability. Now, one more thing that I might like to mention about those financials. Some people like to deplete their P&L or their income statement at the end of each year because then they pay less in income taxes. Well, when you pay less in income taxes, you're showing a low profit. And so if you're considering selling your business, you want to boost that profit. You want to beef it up. So you cannot be both of these things. You have to decide which one of these people do I want to be, the person that doesn't pay any income taxes or the person that gets paid top dollar for his business. So you should really keep that point in mind. And rather than try to deplete your income statement each year, you know, consider, on the other hand, trying to beef up your income statement. You know, yes, you might pay a few extra dollars in taxes, but in the long run, you're going to have a much healthier business for it, whether you're selling it or not.
Yeah, and I think that's a very key, consideration here, because you've got to look at it, as we've talked about, as someone who looks outside the business, and again, the business that, you know, appears to be doing well but shows a very low profit, again, can be a bit misleading in the fact that, like I said, it's the profits being minimized for taxation purposes. And again, that does have an impact on a potential buyer who is looking at the business, because they obviously want everything to be open and they want to be able to see everything quickly. They want to be able to make a judgment initially so they can say, yes, I'm interested in this business and it's worthwhile me going to the next step. And again, if there are a number of people doing this in the marketplace, again, that's the way they're generally going to do a benchmark of you against other businesses they may be considering. So again, I think that's a really, like I said, a very important point there that you mentioned, and something that, you know, people need to consider, you know, beyond just the current financial year. All right, so since we're now, like I said, we've got to the end of our episode here, Rhianne, what I'll do is, if you just want to maybe give us a summary of what we've discussed, some important points, some things that you reckon listeners need to take away for consideration when it comes to their business, whether they're planning to sell it or not, and then finish off and let us know how we can obviously get in contact with you, keep up to date with what you're doing, and avail ourselves of any services that you can offer in this area.
Thank you so much. Okay, so just to summarize what we talked about, you know, if you are a business owner, you want to ask yourself, when do I want to exit this business? You know, do I want to do it in the next 5 years, the next 10 years, or maybe even the next 20 years? And then start to run your business as if you are getting ready to sell it. And start those business process, the good business habits, right away, and they become part of who you are and part of your company's reputation. And the more your reputation improves, the better your business improves. Then the next thing you want to do is ask yourself, how do I want to exit? Do I want to sell it, merge it, or do I just simply want to close the doors and go home? And all of any answer you choose is perfectly acceptable, but just make sure that you plan for those things. You want to make sure that you're covered, your family's covered, and you have everything that you need. And if there's anything that we can do to help you out, you can reach me at rayanne@sellmymsp.com. You can visit us at sellmymsp.com and read our blogs. We have checklists and blog posts for both buyers and sellers. And reach out at any time. We're here to help.
Excellent, Rayanne. Well, thank you very much for that information. I hope people that are looking to do that do take advantage of that. I'll make sure that we get the information into the show notes for the episode that people have references for that. So again, I think that during these transition phases of technology, it certainly is an opportunity for business owners to pause and reflect, make sure that they're on the track that they want to be on, that they are achieving the goals that they've set themselves, and also take a bit of a breath and look into the future and determine whether that's the road that they wish to travel going forward, and perhaps whether another opportunity has presented itself that may be more beneficial to the goals that they're looking to achieve. And that may include, like I said, you know, merging their business or selling their business, or, you know, potentially closing the doors and moving on to something maybe like full-time paid employment, because again, today's technology challenges are becoming quite demanding with the sheer scale of products that are now available and the customers demanding the access to and the ability to be supported as well. So again, some food for thought there, and I thank Rayanne for her time. And we'll put the details up there if anybody does want to get in contact with her. But again, thank you very much, Rayanne, for your time today. And I think we've got some great lessons out of that.
Thank you, Robert. It's always great to catch up with you.
No problems. All right. Well, I'll round off here and thank everybody for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast. And we'll catch you on the next episode.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.